Cases are rising.
That what we're seeing around us and what we're seeing right here in our own state is a clear indication that we are not quite ready to go to phase two.
Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham decided to hold off on phase two reopening plans amidst a rise in COVID-19 cases.
I should point out that a couple of recent significant cases, one that resulted in a death in Albuquerque, is from going to Arizona for a family event and bringing COVID back. They have dire consequences, dire.
Today on Voice of the Public, we are joined by state epidemiologist Dr. Michael Landon and New Mexico Health Department spokesman David Morgan to help answer your questions about where we are now, where our neighbors are, and where we're going. That's coming up right after NPR News from KRWG Public Media. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Casey.
So glad to have you with us. And we also have New Mexico Department of Health spokesman David Morgan. Hi, David.
Good afternoon. Thanks for letting us come on your show.
Oh, well, we're so glad to have you. And, you know, as we scheduled this weeks ago, we really had no idea where we would be today. And I'm so glad that you're with us today, because it seems like the last few days, this week in particular, has just been a whirlwind.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I really want to start with what is breaking news now from the New Mexico Department of Health, that we have had in New Mexico several deaths, critical injuries from folks ingesting sanitizer. David, what can you tell us?
We've had three deaths in New Mexico. We have one person who has suffered permanent blindness, and three others who are still in critical condition in the hospitals for ingesting hand sanitizer. And this is something that is done in some circles for the alcohol content. And there may be other reasons for that. I'll let Dr. Landon address that. But this is something very much to be concerned about, no matter the circumstances. But in this particular case, these hand sanitizers had methanol in them, and it is that specific item that has cost lives and has changed the course of lives forever as well.
So are you saying this is something that people do not necessarily associated with trying to kill coronavirus?
I have no information about somebody trying to do that for trying to kill the virus from within. There are several other much safer ways to be able to address the coronavirus, from maintaining social distancing and so on.
Right. Dr. Landon,
Casey, this is Michael. We don't believe this has anything to do with the coronavirus, really. These deaths occurred in the northwest part of the state, and primarily, in these cases. And basically, when people are dependent on alcohol and they can't get alcohol, their usual source of alcohol, they will look for other means. And hand sanitizer was available, and unfortunately, was consumed. And this is very unfortunate, but it does happen from time to time, not just during a pandemic, that people who are dependent on alcohol will basically take extreme measures to deal with their dependence.
I see. 646-2212, 575-646-2212. You can call in with your questions for Dr. Landon or for Mr. Morgan, and we appreciate hearing from you today. Let's start with kind of the events of the week, Dr. Landon, in terms of what happened. Obviously, we're seeing spikes in cases. We're seeing increases in New Mexico, but especially in our neighboring states.
Yes, Casey. Unfortunately, Arizona, Texas, Utah, from our neighboring states, are really seeing increased case counts. And what's even more worrisome in Texas and Arizona, they're seeing increases in hospitalization, due to COVID, which is stressing their healthcare system. And while in New Mexico, we have seen some increased case counts this week, we are still doing very well with respect to relatively low COVID hospitalization numbers. They've come down substantially from the peak of the outbreak, a little over a month ago, and come down about a third, which is really good. And so we'll be watching, because when you have increased case counts for COVID, usually within about a week you might see increases in hospitalizations. So we'll be keeping an eye on that. But that's pretty much the big development. The states around us, luckily, are starting to take particularly wearing face masks more seriously, and a number of the municipalities in those states are encouraging that, which is a good sign for us, that the increased mask use and re-encouraging social distancing in the neighboring states will be a benefit to New Mexico.
Just this morning, the Texas governor announced that they would actually be taking a step backward in terms of the reopening plan, closing bars as of today and bringing restaurants back down to 50% capacity from 75% capacity. New Mexico, on the other hand, the governor just announced yesterday that we would be able to just stay where we are.
Right. I mean, I think the governor has taken a really positive, cautious approach to COVID, and a very steady, slow, stepwise approach to reopening, which makes sense. Caution is needed here because the virus is quite unpredictable, and it's good to, when you take an action, pause for a while, see how that action translates into changes in virus transmission, and then you can consider your next step. But it's very important to be cautious, very important to take our time here, and not follow some of the mistakes that some other states have made.
Well, we've got a call from Bill Soles. Good afternoon, Bill. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon.
Do you have a question?
Yes, my question is for Dr. Landon. I'm a state senator. I was up in Santa Fe last week for the special session to deal with the economic fallout of the coronavirus. We got tested before we went up there. I was negative, but a number of my colleagues were not practicing social distance, didn't wear masks while we were in the session. If I were exposed, how long is the incubation period before it would show up on a test if I were to get retested?
Senator Sewells, the incubation period for COVID is 2 to 14 days, but most typically about 5 days. That's the typical incubation period, the length of time it takes from exposure to showing signs of infection.
State Senator Sewells, I'm wondering, why do you think that was the case?
The case that people were not wearing masks up there and social distancing?
Correct.
It's very difficult in a legislative session when you have to have conversations with people. Most of us were wearing masks fairly carefully, but there were several who were never wearing their mask. And I think it was more a political statement, but it endangered the rest of us. And so I'm a little bit concerned.
What about getting tested multiple times? What can you tell us about the availability of testing at this point?
So we are working at being able to test 5,000 people in New Mexico a day. We're working towards being able to increase our test capacity into 7,000 and work even further for the next goal of 10,000 tests a day. We are doing our very best to be able to assure that happens. Our New Mexico Department of Health plays multiple roles in the state's overall health. Our public health division consists of more than 40 public health offices across the state, and all of those offices are providing testing services by appointment, being able to do outreach to local businesses, local organizations, all in the bid to be able to test more and to get as many people tested as humanly possible, because we recognize when we, you know, we have so many people who could potentially have the virus and be asymptomatic, not even know it, and be able to shed the virus, transfer the virus to somebody else and get them sick without even meaning to. So it's just been very much a priority for all of us to be able to make that happen. And our hats are off to our nursing, our medical staff, our support staff, region administrators, for finding ways to be able to assure that morning, noon, evenings, weekends, holidays, whatever it takes, we're out in the field and we are testing on a regular basis.
Senator Soles, have you been able to retest since the legislative session? We may not have. Oh, he did. He hung up. So that's one of the things that I think that people are curious about, because there's been so much conflicting information on the way, even in terms of asymptomatic spreaders. Initially, we heard that was a great danger, and then we heard maybe it wasn't so much of a great danger. And then there was a step back on that. What can you say about the twists and turns along the way, Dr. Landon?
Yes, I mean, you know, with a new virus pretty much just discovered in, you know, December in China, we're learning new things every day. And originally it appeared, I mean, originally, like other coronaviruses, it was felt that there wouldn't be much asymptomatic spread. But this virus is different. And so as we have more data, we've learned that asymptomatic transmission is very significant, you know, anywhere between probably 20 to 40% of cases are asymptomatic. You'll hear different numbers along those lines. And that just means we have to be extra careful. You know, anybody who we don't know, or even some folks we do know that we run into, could have an infection, and that's the challenge here. And we have to, that therefore social distancing is so important, and mask use and hand washing are so critical.
As we learn more along the way, you'll have questions, and please call with those questions today during Voice of the Public, 646-2212. That's 575-646-2212. We welcome you listening all over southern and southwest New Mexico, streaming online at krwg.org, or following along on Facebook this afternoon. So we invite you to join us on any of those platforms, and we're so glad to have both of you here today to talk about what we're seeing now in terms of the reopenings in our neighboring states and what impact that is having on New Mexico. Traveling, people coming and traveling from other states, will there be restrictions?
Well, there are restrictions really right now. We still have travel restrictions for people traveling by air. You know, if you're coming in to New Mexico on business, we expect that you will follow our masking and social distancing requirements, take care of your business, and you know, leave. And when you go back home to your state, of course, you'll you know, have to conform to the rules for your particular state. For people that are driving in and out of New Mexico right now, you know, we are still asking anyone traveling by vehicle into New Mexico from out of state to self-isolate for 14 days upon arrival. We recognize how inconvenient that could potentially be, you know, but you know, there's certainly no legal mechanism for us to be able to close state borders. We just wish that other states would show the care for their citizens by encouraging folks to not travel. We're in the middle of a global pandemic, And this is not usual. This is, this is not business as usual. There's no time for a vacation right here at this point. Right now, we really need to be able to think about the health of ourselves, our loved ones, and just all of us together collectively as a community.
I want to talk a little bit about some of the numbers that we're seeing that are starting to rise in rural areas. I feel like some folks that live in smaller towns felt a little bit insulated from this up to this point. But what's happening now in our rural communities is starting to be a concern.
Right. Casey, it is concerning. I mean, particularly even in the southwest New Mexico. I was looking at the CDC sort of basically the highest rates of cases over the last 2 weeks. And unfortunately, Hidalgo County was one of the top 10 in the country. And, in Lawrenceburg, they really hadn't had any cases, maybe one case. And then all of a sudden, here they are, one of the top 10 locations in the country for COVID. So it can happen anywhere. We're seeing increases in cases in the southeast, southwest, some of the more rural areas. We started out with very high cases in sort of the urban area, high case rates in urban areas in New Mexico, including the Albuquerque metro area, and then that shifted to the northwest. But now we're seeing it really coronavirus pop up throughout the state. And rural and urban areas, just making clear to us that everybody's got to be extra careful about this.
646-2212, 575-646-2212 to join the conversation this afternoon on Voice of the Public. State epidemiologist Dr. Michael Landon with us, who is actually now the outgoing. What a time to leave, Dr. Landon.
Yes, Casey. I mean, it's a tough time. I'll be moving to Virginia to basically to give my parents a hand. So
Well, I wanted to take for us to take a step back now to kind of the beginning. When did this become a conversation, and when did you know it was going to be serious?
Talking about COVID-19?
Yes, that's correct.
We knew the potential for COVID-19 entering the United States would certainly come, and it did. It started in the Seattle area. It bloomed massively in the New York area. But what really is at issue is probably not necessarily a lot of understanding from all of us collectively in the general public, in America as a whole, because we have typically been invulnerable to these things for many people's lifetimes. If you're not vigilant, something bad can sneak up on you. And in this particular case, it was the COVID-19, and the spread that occurred nationwide occurred just like it did in China. It came with travel, and it was that travel into the United States that started it, but then it was also travel within the United States. It was being potentially asymptomatic and just going about our day-to-day lives in our respective communities, wherever we lived in America and in New Mexico. And that, I think that that lack of awareness or that that naivete that this can't happen to me is something that was felt and believed collectively by tens of millions of people, leading us in large part to where we are now.
Thanks, David. Karen is on the line. Good afternoon, Karen. Welcome to Voice of the Public.
I am. Good afternoon, Casey. It's a pleasure to speak to you again. My concerns this week, as I've been watching, I live out here at the Elephant Butte Lake. And, we were only one COVID positive victim here for throughout all of this epidemic. And my concern kind of is towards our governor, lake allowances. And nobody's out there. They're here for the weekends. We've got a national holiday coming up. Nobody's wearing masks. I look at all the license plates. They're all, we're surrounded by it. Texas is the highest, I think, spiking in COVID. Arizona is. We're right in the middle. They're all here in this town. Casey, every time a weekend is gone, we look at the stats. There's another two or three or four Sierra County cases. So it's kind of a veiled message to the governor, hey, some sort of restrictions to follow or something. And that's what I want to say nationally and to, you know, just hello everybody, try to keep it safe, wear a mask, do what's supposed to be done.
Well, thank you, Karen. And, you know, going back, I think a lot of people didn't understand why they couldn't go to the lake, why they couldn't go camping. They'd be socially distancing because they'd be out in nature. Who wants to explain that?
Well, the bottom line is, you know, you're out in nature, but very few of us are out in nature alone. We're, you know, we're with family, we're with friends. And the problem with this virus is its ability to just, transfer from one person to the other, and sometimes with unpredictable medical results. And there's the medical aspect, and there's also an emotional aspect of this. And Karen, I really feel your frustration. I experience it myself. When I go home at night and I will drive past local businesses or, in my neighborhood and see people close together, not distancing, not necessarily masking, sometimes mostly yes, sometimes no. But at the end of the day, the issue with this virus is, you know, anytime you get a group of people together, the potential for the virus spreading exists. And then the larger the group, the greater the potential.
Well, not only that, but people have to stop in those towns along the way to get gas, and food and beverages, and bring it into those small stores in those towns as well.
And that is absolutely true. And the thing is, the governor doesn't have the authority, number one, as I said earlier, to close our state borders. No governor has that power. We can only advise people coming to New Mexico from outside states, coming from El Paso, coming, from wherever they're coming from, to be able to please respect our public health orders, our guidelines, our rules, our advice for masking and distancing, and just try to take care of yourself and each other, your fellow human being. We can only ask that. We can't make them. And as frustrating as it has to feel for Karen and so many others in New Mexico, we are America. We do have freedoms, and among those freedoms include our ability to travel, whether it is medically advisable or not.
Mm-hmm. We have another caller on the line. Nell, good afternoon. Welcome to Voice of the Public.
Oh, hi, it's me.
Hi, yes. Is this Nell?
It is, yes.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi. I was just curious. I grew up in El Paso. I currently live in Texas in a hotbed where cases are seriously spiking. I'm wondering if your governor is taking any of the lessons to be learned from Texas's response to the coronavirus. It's really serious here.
Indeed, and so, I think Governor Lujan Grisham, took action sooner than the Texas governor. So maybe there would be something to go the other way around, that the Texas governor might learn something from the New Mexico governor.
Could be, but my question is there any attempt to, I don't know if it's possible, but I think it probably is to mandate mask wearing, and if there could be any kind of penalty for not wearing one in public, especially when you're in in an enclosed space.
That is a great question, because it has been a topic of debate, I think, right from the start. Who wants to handle that one?
I can speak at least a little bit to that. I can't speak, of course, for Governor Lujan Grisham, but a great many lessons are learned on both sides of the border between New Mexico and Texas, and really just across the United States. The question of being able to legally enforce that is something that is something that has been legally debated on a national stage for the months of this virus, and there's no real good conclusion to that. Just the problem with enforcement alone is very challenging under the best of circumstances. When you have, we literally have a public health order here in New Mexico that says New Mexico residents wear face masks when you're out there in public. But not everybody wants to do that. Mm-hmm. And, there's not enough law enforcement in the world probably to be able to enforce just that particular public health order alone, while still be able to address all of the other issues that our law enforcement and first responders deal with on a day-to-day basis.
Dr. Landon, I want to ask you, because this is another area where we've seen, more science, but maybe conflicting reports. What is the value of wearing a face covering?
Yes, Casey, it's quite valuable. The evidence is increasing. We're learning that this is one of the key interventions that individuals and communities can employ. Social distancing is quite important, staying 6 feet away from people, continuing to wash your hands, that's very important, and wearing face masks. The evidence is become increasingly clear that that's a key intervention to deal with COVID.
And are we looking for, is there a type of mask now that we know is the type that we should look for?
A face covering is fine. A face covering's fine. And the way the face covering works, it's sort of a social contract. I wear the face covering, and then if I'm asymptomatic, if I have COVID and I don't have any symptoms, that face covering will keep me from infecting other people. And so if everybody's wearing their face covering when out in public, there's no doubt we'll reduce transmission and we'll have lower COVID rates.
I want to get on to some other big topics before we let this hour escape us. We talked a little bit about back to school yesterday during the governor's news conference, and I want to know what is the plan and how optimistic are you that we're going to be able to have kids back in class this fall?
Well, there's certainly the opportunity to be able to start the semester together. There's going to be classrooms are going to look and feel very different when the semester starts, not just for our public schools, but for our colleges, our universities. This is something that we've had to take very careful consideration, both medically and from an educational level. The Public Education Department, for whom they would be better equipped to be able to answer this question in terms of their plans. But we all recognize that we have to, as Dr. Landon said, continue that social contract, not just when we're out in public, but when we are actually going to be going to school, when we are going to be teaching our students, when we are going to, be getting an education. And it is going to look and feel very different, and it will be very challenging despite everything that we've anticipated, both the Public Education Department and the Department of Health, and probably the same is true for our counterpart departments across the country. Despite all of our guidance currently, based on what we know, we're also going to be very much learning as we go, too. It is, there's no way to be able to forecast very far out where this virus is going to go, how quickly it's going to spread. It is a priority of both of our state agencies to do our best to be able to assure the health of our education workforce and, of course, our students. So they can get the quality learning that they require to be able to grow up and be great New Mexicans.
Yeah. Dr. Landon, what do we know now about how young people are affected by coronavirus and the mysterious condition that we have seen a couple of cases of here in New Mexico? What can you tell us about that?
Sure, Casey. So we don't feel that... we don't feel that children are as infectious as adults or are likely to be as have as many infections. That being said, I think we've recently seen that a lot of the spike in cases nationally and in some of the states that have had really high increases in case counts have been among young adults. So I know we're talking about children. But young adults are a big part of the picture in terms of the of transmission, particularly with reopening. There's been, people have been cooped up, and in particular, folks are interested in going to bars, restaurants, et cetera, if they're open. And a lot of those folks doing that are younger folks. We've been fortunate in this state that we haven't had our infection rate among persons 65 years and older, who are at higher risk of complications of COVID, has actually been lower than that for persons 65 years and younger. So in terms of the children, there's a sense that we don't have as much of an issue in terms of severe illness among children, and we've seen that, but it's still there's still an important population for transmission, and this weighs heavily in the decisions about how to open schools. So the New Mexico approach is to, as it generally is with respect to reopening, go slowly, go cautiously, and let's open with 50% of kids in the schools at any one time, reducing the amount of people in any one place in a school.
I want to talk a little bit about immunizations, but first, Dr. Landon, what's the word at this point on where we might be with the development of a vaccine?
Well, there are a number of encouraging signs in that several candidate vaccines are moving into phase 2, phase 3 trials, which are the necessary steps to get a vaccine. And, I'm hopeful, and I think a number of people are hopeful, that around the turn of the year, maybe winter, early spring, we'll have a vaccine available for COVID. Now, the big question will be how effective will that vaccine be? And that's the advantage of having many different vaccine options, which are being developed right now. So I think we should have one, hopefully within a year, and hopefully it'll be very effective. We've also got influenza season looming, mm-hmm. and we have to be wary of influenza season by itself, but influenza season plus COVID will be particularly challenging. And we know everyone can get an influenza vaccination. So, I hope everyone is planning on doing that. Vaccination coverage for influenza is about 50% in New Mexico. A little better than the U.S. coverage, about 50%. That's not good enough, particularly for this season. So we'll really need to, you know, improve our game with respect to influenza vaccination, which will help reduce complications from flu and also probably reduce complications from COVID.
A lot of people have said all along that, the flu kills more people. Well, I think that we can see clearly now that that this is no average flu, COVID-19, that's for sure, with over 120,000 Americans dead. Back to the immunizations. David, the health department is planning some clinics coming up in order to get kids ready to go back to school. Is that right?
That's right. Our more than 40 public health offices across the state are gearing up, even through our COVID testing period here, to be able to plan for and prepare for being able to provide back-to-school immunizations. Here in Las Cruces, for example, our Las Cruces Public Health Office at the corner of Solano and Spruce, they are going to be starting to give back-to-school immunizations by appointment starting on July 1st, and we will be providing those immunizations through the end of August. The appointments can be made the appointments are available only in the afternoon, but all they have to do is contact our local public health office here in Las Cruces at 575-528-5006. That's 528-5006 to be able to make that appointment, and we'll get the kids scheduled. In these uncertain times, immunizations are more important than ever. We can't emphasize that enough. So in order to be able to better focus on the battle of COVID, it's really going to be important to be able to take care of our little ones and take care of ourselves, you know, with regards to flu season as well, because the better protection we have against these really just minimizes the chances for any other complications that could possibly come along here with COVID-19.
You're listening to Voice of the Public on KRWG. Thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you to Dr. Michael Landon, state epidemiologist, to Health Department spokesman David Morgan, and to you for calling 646-2212. That's 575-646-2212. Meiji is on the line. Good afternoon.
Hello. I know Michael Landon. Michael, I was at the public health office in Sierra County for a number of years, and I do remember you. But my question is, I've been reading lately that antibodies to COVID-19 may not persist, and there are people that have gotten infected twice. Is this because I'm asking you, I mean, is there any information on whether antibodies are persisting?
Hi, Meiji. How are you doing? It's great to talk to you again. Meiji and I worked together when I worked out of Las Cruces in 97 to 2000. So, hi, Meiji. In terms of antibodies, we're still, you know, new virus, unpredictable virus. We're accumulating information about the virus. And there is some information in some studies that suggests that antibodies will be protective. And one big question is for how long and if there are key groups that won't be protected. But that information is coming in. We can't say right now that reinfection does not occur, but we are, you know, that information is still accumulating. But so the antibody, information on the antibody, basically protection around antibodies is still to be coming as we do more research.
Thank you, Meiji. And also, is there any indication about this virus changing, different strains of this virus at this point?
You know, there was a study out of Lannel talking about a mutation that might be significant. that really hasn't panned out. If anything, COVID is a more stable virus. I mean, all viruses mutate, but influenza virus mutates more often and more frequently than this virus. So I think that bodes well for us, you know, locking into the virus, developing a good vaccine, and having protection resulting from that vaccine. So mutation is not a terribly significant aspect of COVID at this time.
Good. Marvin is holding with a question for us this afternoon. Good afternoon, Marvin.
Yes, I was partially listening, and I thought somebody mentioned something adverse about hiking. Did you sort of poo-poo hiking?
I don't think that's, no, that's not really what you heard. We were talking about getting out into the great outdoors, and a lot of people didn't understand, you know, why some of our parks were closed and why we were discouraged from doing that, and talking about the spread of the virus and how it happens and how people have to go through small towns to buy groceries and get gas when they're on their way out there to the great outdoors. So that was something that we touched on after a caller from Elephant Butte, who is very concerned about people coming out and spreading the virus in that community as well. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think one of the things that I just noticed is that the in supermarkets, there are at least two of the supermarkets I have patronized have tried to make one-way aisles, mm-hmm. and I don't see that being followed.
I can attest to that personally. It's just something to get used to, and before I know it, I'm halfway down the aisle going the wrong way, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think you got to sort of partner with wear a mask. If somebody's not wearing a mask, you can certainly stay away from them. But, I'm not concerned about catching that. And also, I'm just wondering, another question is, I don't plan on taking the test because that's just a snapshot of when I take the test. I think if there's people that need to have some reason to think they have it, probably it's no, I don't feel a need for me to take that test.
Okay. Well, did you have a question, though, about it?
I'm just thinking of why should I use one of these tests
Great.
Somebody else that may need it.
Great question. And let me go back to either one of you on that, because we started out early with that and the availability of testing. I got a test as an asymptomatic person because I was about to come back to the office and I wanted to be sure I wasn't an asymptomatic carrier. Is that a good enough reason to get the test?
Yes, I mean, that's a reasonable reason, particularly if you're going back to work. Of course, you know, folks who are having significant symptoms need to get tested. People who are household contacts of cases should get tested, that sort of thing. You know, New Mexico has really done a good job with testing. Two of the measures that are really key are per capita testing rates. We're fourth. We have the fourth best per capita testing rate in the country, clearly the best in the Southwest. And then with respect to test positivity rates, we want to be doing enough testing to keep the percentage of tests that are positive low. And so New Mexico is at 3.6% with respect to test positivity, which is eighth best in the country. The U.S. as a whole right now is at about 8%. So we're better than we're doing substantially better than the U.S. as a whole with respect to that. So, you know, there are many indications to get tested. If people think they were exposed to somebody with COVID, yeah, go ahead and get tested. But also, it's appropriate if people are doing a good job social distancing, they're wearing their face masks, keeping their, you know, washing their hands frequently, and pretty much staying at home. They probably don't have a need to get tested.
All right. Mary is holding with a question. Voice of the Public this afternoon on KRWG. Welcome, Mary.
Hi. My question is regarding the health department. I recently talked to someone who said her son was ill, and I said, well, you know, the health department is testing, and she said, well, you need insurance. And that was kind of bothered me because I did hear an advertisement for the health department saying you needed to bring proof of insurance for the drive-up testing, and I thought that was kind of discouraging, you know, maybe sending a not good message that if you don't have insurance, you can't get tested. So, you know, possibly saying, if you have insurance, please bring it, might sound better.
What is
my question?
Thank you for the question. Is that the case? Do you need insurance to get tested?
Mary, that's a very good question. And no, you absolutely do not need insurance to get tested by the New Mexico Department of Health. The confusion that that you speak of, potential mixed message of asking people to bring their insurance, that is something that we certainly have struggled with internally, to be able to find really the best way to be able to say that. The fact of the matter is we are not going to charge anybody money to be able to get a COVID-19 test anywhere in New Mexico. That said, though, it costs to test any one of us for COVID-19. And the state does have an interest in being able to recoup some of that cost. So for those of us who are lucky enough to be able to have insurance that the Department of Health could in turn possibly bill and save the taxpayers some money in the process, that is certainly a win-win situation.
All right, thank you. And Marie has been waiting on the line with a question. Good afternoon, Marie.
Hi. So I have a question. If you are using a face mask and gloves correctly, can the droplets of a corona-infected individual enter the body through uncovered skin?
No.
No. Well, that was an easy one.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Marie. It's so nice when we have just a yes-no answer, isn't it?
And this is actually Mike to a T. He literally just, he answered the question as thoroughly as necessary. But he has done this over the years with me in email. And it is really one of the things about him that I'm going to miss the most.
Yeah. If you're texting, you get a K, right?
Third, those three-word emails, David, yes. Mike, David, no, Mike.
Well, we only have a few minutes left. I can't believe this hour has evaporated so quickly, but I want to move on to contact tracing. Where does New Mexico stand in terms of contact tracers? What should people expect from them?
Yes, a great question, Casey. So New Mexico has been contact tracing throughout. A number of other states have just geared up recently. We have been investigating every single case, tracking, determining who their contacts are, and then monitoring those contacts and assuring that they're quarantined. So the whole principle here is if someone has COVID, they should be isolated as soon as possible. That's the case investigation. Talk to the case, get them isolated, and then do an investigation of who their contacts are. And we've also had a more aggressive approach to defining who a contact is. CDC is currently using a close contact definition of within 6 feet for 15 minutes or more. We use 3 minutes or more. So we have a more aggressive approach, and hopefully that leads to reducing transmission even better. So a key thing that we're doing is expanding the number of contact tracers. We've relied on some great Department of Health staff to do the contact tracing, and they have other jobs too. So we're hiring some dedicated contact tracers, and New Mexico will just continue doing excellent contact investigations and contact tracing throughout. That's our plan.
Are there jobs available as contact tracers now?
There are jobs that are being filled. At this point in time, we have enough applications. You know, we'll see if we need more, but we have a lot of applications that we're going through to fill those positions.
Sounds good. And what else do we need to touch on before? I wanted to get just your thoughts on the world picture. We're hearing that European companies or countries are actually going to limit travel from the United States. It's how did we find ourselves in this situation?
Right. Casey, if I could just one more thing about contact tracing, then I'll go to that.
Sure.
You know, the way contact tracing works best is if we can get a hold of people by phone. So what is really challenging is someone gets a test and perhaps their contact information isn't optimal or they elect to not answer the phone. So I would just put out a plea there for people that if you get tested, be prepared to answer your phone over the next couple days because you may need to talk to us about how to isolate from others and reduce the chance of spreading COVID. So I just wanted to add that. But, the tables have really turned in that, Europe seems to have had a more significant end to a first wave than the U.S., and we're still in our first wave. We haven't had that reprieve that Europe is seeing. So, you know, unfortunately, I think realistically, we're looked on as a country with a lot of transmission of COVID right now, and that's a fact.
Let's talk about one of those spots where it's transmitting so quickly, and that is, in particular, the Otero prison, where we have an alarming number of cases, and it's not state territory. So how do we deal with that?
We deal with it the best we can. And between the Department of Health and the Department of Corrections, we are genuinely trying our best. There are three different populations within the Otero County prison facility, and they are operated differently. There's a federal section, there's, you know, just the state section, there's the county section. And then also design of the facility has had a very important role in how this has spread. The architecture of this was designed to be able to have lots of communal spots, which, a lot of communal areas are really, you know, at this point, the greatest place where COVID-19 can thrive. So it has been and it will continue to be an uphill battle to be able to try to isolate, to be able to be sure that that inmates get the care that they need and the distance they need to be able to get better and to reduce the overall case count.
Thank you for that. We have just about a minute left. Dr. Landon, what are the promising treatments for COVID-19 that we're seeing now developing?
Well, I think the most promising one is based on studies out of Great Britain, where dexamethasone, which is a very common steroid, has been shown to reduce death rates. Really the first treatment that has been shown to reduce death rates. So dexamethasone is a very promising new treatment. It's very widely available, and it really bodes well, particularly for people that are either requiring oxygen or end up on a ventilator. So we have some promise of reducing death rates there, which is very positive.
Well, thank you very much for that. Some final words, David?
We just encourage everybody to be able to get testing as they need testing and to be able to prepare for the fall and be sure to get your children immunized, get their records up to date. And, of course, this season, now more than ever, please consider getting your flu shot.
Dr. Landon, best wishes to you as you make your way to Virginia to be with your family. Thank you for serving New Mexico over these years. It's not always been about coronavirus. You had a very serious issue with the opioid epidemic that you were working so hard on as well.
Well, thank you very much, Casey, and really appreciate that. Thanks.
Thank you both for joining us this afternoon. Thank you for joining us on Voice of the Public. If you are interested in learning more about testing information from the New Mexico Department of Health, here's a telephone number you can call. It's 855-600-3453. That's 855-600-3453. So much information to cover this afternoon. Thank you so much for being a part of it. Streaming KRWG.org or watching along on Facebook or for calling in your questions. We'll do it again next Friday.